Welcome to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hi, I'm Steve Chiotakis, and I am exhausted. And so, I would imagine, are you? In addition to everything else going on in the world, COVID-19 never went away, and now seems to be flourishing in a new mutated form, Omicron variant BA.5. With cases averaging in the 4, 5, 6, 7,000 per day range, and hospitalizations and deaths on the rise, L.A. County could be re-implementing an indoor mask mandate in just a couple of weeks. Well, maybe you haven't stopped masking, but a lot of your SoCal neighbors have. We talked to a few of them in Silver Lake at a couple of grocery stores.
I have a mask. I do wear it here and there, but I don't really like wearing it.
My family just got it for the first time, and that changed my calculus a little bit. Feels like my days are numbered, not having gotten it at all, and c'est la vie. I hope that it's not so bad when I get it.
I'm not wearing a mask at the moment. I feel like I just got over it, so I'm good. I don't know if that's how it works, but I feel like I'm in the clear. I don't see myself getting it again.
COVID really is a new way of life, and I think this is just kind of a new way of living for right now. And small businesses are already struggling, so why would I want to also tell someone that you can't come in who's really adamant about not wearing a mask when at the end of the day we need the revenue to stay and keep in business?
I'm not really feeling anxiety anymore. I am over it like everybody else is.
A few voices of Greater LA. USC virologist Paula Cannon is our go-to COVID expert. She's here now to break it all down for us. Happy to have you back, Paula.
Hey, good to be back.
Exhausted. I don't know any other way to say it. You know what I'm saying? It's like you have to be concerned. I'm a journalist, so I'm constantly looking at this stuff. I'm sure a lot of people have done way too many rabbit holes. And when you're thinking about, you know, Omicron and BA4 and BA5 and all of this stuff, I mean, what's the top line? What should we be thinking about right now, Paula?
Yes. Well, okay. First of all, you have my permission to be completely exhausted and tired of this. Believe you me, I am as well. But if I can get everybody's attention for a moment, what I would say is that the BA5 is just hitting it out of the park at the moment. It's incredibly infectious. It's like no other version of COVID that we've seen. And because of that, it's just, you know, it's going through the population. And it also has this kind of superpower that not only is it incredibly infectious, but it's very, very resistant to the, at least the frontline immune responses that we develop when we get vaccinated or when we have prior infections, those antibodies whizzing around in our blood. So even if you've been vaccinated, even if you had Omicron, I don't know, 4 weeks ago, you've still really not got protection against BA5. It's the bomb.
This is a mutation, right, of Omicron, which is a mutation of the original novel coronavirus. I mean, this is what viruses do.
It is. And it's especially what viruses do when there is like, you know, a billion people being infected with them. I mean, it's not something that viruses do super regularly, but there's just so many people have been infected with COVID. There's so much virus in the world that even an incredibly rare, you know, mutant virus that might arise, it's got every reason to have an advantage. If it's more infectious and if it can bypass the antibodies that we're all making, then it's just going to, you know, spread faster than anything else. And that's why today we have BA5.
I don't want to get into this train of thought that, you know, put down your weapons, there's nothing we can do, we need to stay home again, or, you know, all of those things, because we are so much better now, correct,
than we
were at the beginning of this pandemic.
Yes. And so the good news is, so I just told you the bad news, which is that the antibodies we are making don't stop you getting infected. But oh boy, when you get infected, it's a completely different disease in the vast majority of people who've been vaccinated than it would have been, you know, 2 years ago. So the rest of the immune system still works really well. So it kind of controls the infection. You get BA5, you may have very mild symptoms, or frankly, you may be pretty miserable. But most people, the vast majority of vaccinated people, are not going to end up in hospital with this variant. So it's a massive inconvenience. And we do need to kind of try and stop it spreading, but it's not the, you know, deadly variants that we saw early on in the pandemic.
Is it concerning to you, Paula, when you see the number of hospitalizations in LA County up? Now we've crossed 1,000. I know at the peak of the winter surge, we were nearing 8,000 people in the hospital. So we're at 1,000 now, which, you know, I mean, that's 1/8, right? But no one likes to see those numbers go up.
No, and it's concerning for a couple of reasons. I mean, of course, it's concerning for the people who are in the hospital. But again, you know, compared to even a year ago, we've got pretty good drugs now and we have a better way of managing those infections. But I think more than that, what we worry about is just the sort of the knock-on effects of having a lot of people in the hospital with COVID. And even if you're in the hospital for something else, you know, you were in a car crash and then you found out you had COVID when you were tested, it creates all this extra hassle for the hospital. They have to try and isolate you. So just the strain on our hospitals caused by a lot of people, even if they're not sick with COVID, having COVID is what we're worried about. So this is why, you know, LA County Department of Public Health are probably going to reinstate indoor mask mandates in a couple of weeks, just to try and keep the lid on the spread so that we can protect our hospitals in this way.
That's what I was going to ask you, because we have not only the strain, but we also have an increase in deaths now, right? Deaths are up as well, which is a lagging metric. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, it's hard to know at the moment how high the death rate's going to go. And of course, we're all, you know, we want to be optimistic, but it's too early to tell. As cases go up, as hospitalizations go up, in every other surge we've had, the death rate has also gone up. Again, we hope that with the advanced drugs we've got and the better ways of managing these infections, and of course, you know, the vast majority of people in LA County are vaccinated, you know, yay us. So we hope that we can keep these numbers down, but I think we're just going to have to watch the numbers for the next, you know, few weeks.
We keep underscoring vaccinations, very important, boosting, very important. But let's talk about the masks, all right? So I've been out, we've all been out, right? And we've tried to get back to some semblance of normalcy, right? To get mm-hmm. to the, maybe go out and have a drink somewhere or get breakfast somewhere in a restaurant or whatever. Some people didn't stop, right? But here we are. I still see so many people not wearing masks when I go to the grocery store, when I go to a club, and I, you know, and it even makes me nervous, masked myself. I'm still masked whenever I go to those places. What do you tell people who are like, I'm over this, I'm done, because I'm exhausted too, you're exhausted. What do you say?
Yeah, well, we're all exhausted, but you know who isn't exhausted? It's COVID. You know, it's like having a party. So I say to people two things. I say, first of all, to protect yourself. You know, and if you are at all concerned about COVID, and a lot of us are, you know, based on age or underlying conditions, then it's time to really make sure you have a good, well-fitting mask, a KN95 and N95, not just, you know, a cloth mask with your favorite sports team on. But then in addition, you know, I don't wear a mask when I'm outdoors, but when I go into a grocery store, when I get on an airplane, when I'm in my office, I always put a mask on, and to me, it's sort of second nature now, but it's also a way of just protecting everybody else. It's not going to last forever. I know we're all tired of it, but you know, masks are really easily available. You can get comfortable ones now, and it's just a sign that really that you care about other people and you're doing your part to try and keep this current wave as low as we possibly can.
We keep hearing from LA public health officials that we could be entering this high transmission phase, right, where we're listed as high transmission in LA County. And if we have that for a couple of weeks, then they're going to reinstitute this mask mandate. Do you think that's going to happen?
I do, yes. I mean, the numbers are, as you say, we're already at a sort of 1,000 cases in our hospitals. And I think the metric is something like once you have 10 COVID cases in hospital per 100,000 people, you're classified as high. And when you're in the high category for at least 2 weeks, that's going to trigger the indoor mask mandate again in LA County, which means masks in our schools, in our grocery stores, in our offices, in our restaurants. So I think that's highly likely to happen by the end of the month. Yeah.
Do you think it's going to become yet again this issue where people are not doing it, people are getting into arguments when they go to the store, you know, all of that stuff? Because, you know, businesses have to deal with this as well.
Yeah, you know, I think it depends, doesn't it? I mean, even, you know, previously there were certainly pockets where people wouldn't wear masks, but in general, I found that in most of the places I went into, people were wearing masks. And, you know, we human beings are pack animals. So if you start to go into, you know, your local grocery store and you see that the majority of people are wearing a mask, you know, your reaction should be, oops, let me go back to the car and get mine rather than I'm not going to wear a mask, you know. So I think in LA and California in general, we've been pretty good about, you know, going along with these mask mandates. And I think because the reason is explained to people, it's not all the time. It's just we've got this crazy infectious BA.5 variant, and the levels in our hospitals are starting to get concerning. That's the reason to do it. I think most rational human beings would understand that and go along with it.
Do you think businesses should be asking people to wear masks anyway before they walk in the door without any kind of mandate?
You know, I think it depends on the business, doesn't it? I certainly think that if the people in the business are wearing masks, and you know, maybe there's a signage on the door asking you to do that, but whether individual people want to approach somebody who's not wearing a mask and kind of get into it with them, you know, I think that's probably a lot to ask somebody, for example, in a store. But, you know, for I guess the rest of us, we can wear our masks knowing that not only is it protecting everybody else, but especially if you have a good quality mask, it's also going to be protecting you from those little clouds of BA.5 that are floating around the deli aisle in your favorite grocery store.
So still the masks, exhausting, right? Exhausting but necessary. And vaccinations. Telling folks to go get those vaccinations and a booster. If you haven't had a shot, if you say got a shot sometime in 2021, right? And you haven't had something to boost it, I mean, it's probably worn off, right?
Yeah, I think there's two things to know. So the first thing is that, you know, forget the terminology, you know, fully vaccinated, boosters, it's all very confusing. The bottom line is that these vaccines, these RNA vaccines, are a three-dose minimum series. So you really need to have had three shots, which is, you know, the original two plus a booster. That is going to protect you massively more than if you just had the first two. So if you haven't had your first booster, I would say run, don't walk, to your local pharmacy and go get one as soon as possible. Then, in addition, we do know that, again, immunity overall stays really good and protects us from serious disease. But these sort of frontline defenses, these antibodies, they do go down after a few weeks. So one of the advantages of having a booster, including having a second booster, is that it kind of tops your levels back up again. So again, if it's been, you know, 3, 4 months since you had your first booster, so that would be shot number three, then I would, and you're over 50 or you have an underlying health condition, I would recommend going for shot number four. That'll top your levels back up and it'll give you some extra protection as we're going through this wave of BA.5.
If you do get sick, Paula, the mandate is obviously still to quarantine, asymptomatic, what, 5 days, right? Or with symptoms, 10 days?
So the CDC say 5 days, and there's a little bit of controversy around this because, you know, after 5 days, if you do a home antigen test, if that's negative, you know, you're clear. But if it's still positive, it's telling you that even if you feel okay, you've still got a nose full of virus that you can breathe out. So, you know, I would say to people, be guided by those antigen tests starting at day five. You know, test yourself and kind of wait until you go negative on those tests because that's a good correlate of how infectious you are. And for people who need to go out, I know some people, you know, they have to go back to work, then just recognize that even after 5 days, you're likely still infectious. And please, you know, wear a good quality mask and open windows and try and avoid being around people if you have to. If you're not able to quarantine for longer.
I think it's important to also underscore the fact that there are a lot of people taking these home tests, and those tests aren't being reported to the county. So when you see a number like 5,000 people infected with COVID today, or whatever it may be, right, 5,000, 6,000, 4,000, whatever it's been, you know, the past few weeks, that's not really an accurate count, is it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, most you know, worst case scenario is probably that it's a tenfold undercount, which means that I was doing the back of the envelope calculation earlier. That means that probably one in 30 people you come across today in LA County will have BA5. So again, just thinking about going into your grocery store, you're almost guaranteed that there's somebody going to be in there with BA5, and they may be completely unaware, you know, early stages of the infection or an asymptomatic infection. So it really is all around at the moment, and it's very, very infectious. And that's why so many people are getting it. I mean, I don't know about you, Steve, but I have so many friends who are just like, oh, it finally got me. I'm like, well, no kidding, because this one is really infectious.
Yeah, it seems to spread. Can we talk about monkeypox before we let you go?
Oh, sure.
It's, you know, just one of the greatest hits that we've got today. So
yeah, you know, being a virologist, it's just the gift that keeps on giving this year.
Yeah. So should we be concerned? I think we've got 50, I think somewhere in that neighborhood, people in LA County who have monkeypox.
Not for the vast majority of people, no. So the great thing about monkeypox is it's infectious, sure, but only when you're kind of really up close and kind of intimate with people. And also, people have lesions on their skin. So, you know, it's kind of a bit of a giveaway. So you can tell who's infected. You know, at the moment, we know that it's mostly going through members of the gay community. So, you know, if you're in that risk group, maybe think twice about going to large raves or indoor events where you're going to be, you know, in close contact with people. But, you know, it's not a super, you know, serious virus. Yeah, nobody wants to get lesions, and it can make people sick. So far, nobody's died. And there are vaccines that can be given to people. So if you do think you've been in contact with somebody or been at an event where somebody had monkeypox, you know, you can get a vaccine that will hopefully protect you. But at the moment, it's not, you know, our biggest concern. But I think, you know, monkeypox is probably going to be here to stay, at least at a low level. And it's just, we're just going to add it to the list of, you know, viruses that unfortunately as humans we have to worry about.
Paula Cannon, Associate Professor of Microbiology at USC's Keck School of Medicine. Paula, as always, thank you for your advice and counsel. We do appreciate it, and hopefully we can talk to you with better circumstances going forward.
That would be nice. Take care, Steve.
Straight ahead on GLA, who gets the best choice and care when it comes to cancer? Depends on your insurance, of course, and lower-income folks don't have the same access. Can California legislation change that? That's yours on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
It's Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Chances are you know somebody who has or has had cancer. It's terrible news to get, but going through it can be even worse depending on your overall health and finances. So let's talk about that going through it part. If you're lucky, you get to start treatment as soon as possible. But for low-income folks and others who have Medi-Cal, it's often not that simple. Many cancer specialists don't accept Medi-Cal patients, and it won't always pay for the latest, most effective, and sometimes most expensive treatments. That can mean a lot of time spent jumping through insurance hoops. And by the time treatment is made available, well, it can be too late. The California Cancer Care Equity Act is aiming to solve that problem. Here to tell us more about it is Anita Chabria. She's a columnist at the LA Times. And Dr. Joe Alvarez is an oncologist at City of Hope. Welcome to you both.
Hey, nice to be on.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Anita, first of all, for those who don't know, what is Medi-Cal? How many people have it for health insurance in California?
Well, Medi-Cal is our plan for low-income folks here in California that offers them insurance. In particular, when it comes to cancer, there's 13.5 million people who are in managed care plans, which basically means you get your Medi-Cal through an insurance provider who is contracting with the state.
In your column, Anita, you write about how your husband was diagnosed with cancer when you were pregnant. You were 8 months pregnant, I believe, right?
I was 8 months pregnant. I was getting ready to pop.
And talk about his diagnosis, because I can't even imagine, you know, all of the emotions that must have been running through you and your husband.
You know, like so many people who face a cancer diagnosis, it came out of the blue for us. It never crossed our minds that this was a possibility. And he went in for a routine physical, and the doctor found something concerning. And within a matter of days, we found ourselves, you know, needing to find a surgeon, needing to come up with that follow-up plan for chemotherapy. And as anyone who's had a cancer diagnosis knows, it's this instant plunge into the deep end where you're just trying to, you know, figure out how you're going to keep your loved one alive.
It's heartbreaking. What were your next steps after he was diagnosed?
We were incredibly lucky. My husband actually worked for the LA Times and had Times insurance at that point. And so we were such lucky people that we were able to choose where we wanted to go. And so, you know, we did what everyone does when they face these situations. You start calling folks and asking, you know, what should I be thinking about? Where's the best place to go? And we wound up at City of Hope.
So City of Hope. Was it experimental treatment? Was it just general treatment that you could get, very good treatment? What was the deal there?
So the difference between something like City of Hope, which is a comprehensive cancer center, there's tons of good doctors. And first of all, I don't want anyone out there who's not at a comprehensive cancer center to think that they're not getting amazing treatment, because there's great doctors and great facilities everywhere. What a comprehensive cancer center does is provides this laser focus on particular kinds of cancer. This is all they do, and they know what they're doing. And we were just found ourselves surrounded by people who understood what we were going through and understood things that we were going to go through before we even understood it.
In your column, Anita, you also write about a family that had a very different story than the one that your husband and you had. Talk a little bit about Primo Castro.
Well, Primo Castro, you know, his mother, Maria Lourdes, who everyone called Patty. Patty was a stay-at-home mom raising her kids. And when she was in her 40s, she just started to not feel well and was eventually diagnosed with gallbladder cancer, which is a rare cancer. And it took some misdiagnoses to get to that diagnosis in the end. And what happened is that there weren't a lot of treatments available to her where she was getting care. There was a clinical trial, but Medicare was not an accepted insurance at that medical trial. So she was locked out of it. And I think for Primo, that's always stuck with him all these years, that as his family went through this and as they struggled and watched their mom deteriorate, there was this, you know, long shot chance, but a chance that was unavailable to them based solely on the fact that they were on this state insurance that really caters to our most vulnerable citizens. And that just seems unjust to him, and it certainly seems unjust to me. And that's what the state is considering changing right now with this bill.
Doctor, how often do you hear these types of stories?
Tragically, I hear them too often. There are too many patients that I hear about either anecdotally or from family members who will call and reach out telling me that their loved one has been affected by cancer and they're looking for every option possible. We have 8 NCI designated cancer center, comprehensive cancer centers in California. They simply can't get to them because of constraints or barriers within their system of coverage, particularly if they're beneficiaries of the Medi-Cal system.
Is it, obviously it's a matter of money. It's always a matter of money. If you're a comprehensive cancer center, does it mean if you're a City of Hope or one of these others, you know, it costs so much money. It's so prohibitively expensive for the experimental treatment or whatever treatments you're getting, the comprehensive treatment that you're getting, that health insurers just don't want to do it. I mean, is there something a City of Hope can do on its end to move the needle a little bit?
So I think there's more to the issue than that, which is for many years at City of Hope, we've cared for patients under the Medi-Cal fee-for-service traditional model. And when patients, for instance, under the state's breast cancer cervical cancer treatment program needed care, we delivered care to them. What's happened, and this is a key component of how healthcare is paid for, is that as patients have gotten shifted into managed care entities, many of them don't include a National Cancer Institute Comprehensive Cancer Center within their network. And for patients to leave their network, especially if they're Medi-Cal beneficiaries or come from vulnerable communities, it takes an act of God assisted by everybody in the universe to try to make that happen. So I don't think the barriers to patients coming to these centers are principally financial. They're contractual. And that's kind of the basis for the legislation that we've been trying to move forward, is to get past those borders of contracts, which in many ways functionally disenfranchise the most vulnerable members of our communities from being able to get the access to care that we would want for ourselves and our families.
We're going to talk about this bill in a moment. What does a city of hope do, Doctor, if there is a family that wants to, you know, go into some sort of comprehensive treatment? They have Medi-Cal, but they can't afford it. Do you work with them? Is there something like that? Are there loans available?
So we work with families and patients to help facilitate their access. When we find out about a patient who can't come to us, I'll start working with members of our managed care department so that they can reach out to that medical group to try to secure access for the patient. We'll also reach out to colleague physicians within the community to help support their care decision-making in that transition time between when the patient becomes known to us and when they can actually get care. But it also it compels us in many ways to think beyond the role of just being clinicians to being those who in many ways work collaboratively with those in our institution and those physicians and medical groups to try to smooth a path for patients to get here.
Anita, I know City of Hope is one of the backers of this legislation currently in the legislature called the California Cancer Care Equity Act. It's aimed at making cancer treatment more accessible for even low-income people who have Medi-Cal, who are on Medi-Cal. How does it propose to do that?
So it really is about the contracts. What happens is, and everyone who has insurance knows this, you have an insurance provider and they have in-network folks that they'll pay for you or pay more for you when you use those providers. But what happens in a lot of these Medi-Cal plans is they simply just don't have a contract with a comprehensive cancer center. Not because it is more expensive, but because it could be more complicated, they just don't want to do it. There's a million reasons why they don't do it. This bill says every managed care plan has to make a good faith effort to include at least one comprehensive cancer center, or a facility of that caliber.
Who's opposing this bill? Are health insurers against it?
There's been the hospital plans, the Medi-Cal plans providers have had some concerns about it. They actually did not respond to my request to know exactly what their position is on it right now. So I think that, anything that makes it more complicated for them to contract raises concerns.
There are a lot of folks, and Doctor, I'll bring you back into the conversation. A lot of folks want to see more people covered under public health care, single-payer health care, as it were. Bernie Sanders says everyone should be covered by some sort of health care plan. But if public plans are the ones that don't cover the most expensive comprehensive treatments, as we're talking about, does that mean more people won't have access to those treatments vis-a-vis what you guys do at City of Hope or at Anderson or Sloan Kettering or wherever it is?
Well, my sense is that big systems of extending coverage don't necessarily integrate the nuance of patients, every patient, into that kind of model. So I've spent my entire career caring for people with cancer, particularly blood cancers and HIV-related cancers. People don't, in general, design insurance plans or systems to make sure that the needs of those patients are fully met. So as I think about some of these grander ideas, I just want to make sure that the necessary complexity of getting this right and ensuring that vulnerable patients can get access to life-saving clinical trials or to care innovations that I'd want for my family, that those things happen in an equitable way.
I mean, it sounds like there are many, many types of people, many sizes of people, and we live in sort of this one-size-fits-all society, especially when it comes to health insurance. Are you following the bill's progress, Doctor? I mean, how optimistic are you?
So I've been following it closely. This is, again, having been a clinician at City of Hope for 25 years, the human toll of not getting this right is graphically made apparent. So I'm tracking the bill. We're doing everything possible to support its passage. I think that access equals life. And if we can create a path through which patients with the most aggressive and hardest to treat cancer types don't have to fight battle after battle through a process of denials to be able to get to the right care that they need, then that's the kind of medicine that I want to be involved in practicing.
Anita Chabria, how's your husband?
He is one of the incredibly lucky ones. He is 10 years cancer-free now, so I'm very thankful to that.
Anita Chabria, columnist at the LA Times. Dr. Joe Alvarez, oncologist over at City of Hope. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Knock wood. All right. That's going to do it for us today. Tomorrow, a new streetcar line is supposed to bring business to downtown Santa Ana and the OC, but its construction sure isn't helping existing business nearby. A lot of disruption. You're going to hear about that tomorrow on Greater LA. You can visit our website anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. Tell us how you're doing by sharing your thoughts with us. Give us some story ideas. Subscribe to the podcast too, all at our website, kcrw.com/GreaterLA. Or you can just shorten it to kcrw.com/GLA. Or get the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Juliana Mayo, Rebecca Ludman, Zoe Matthews, Sonia Geis, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all made this evening's episode possible. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thank you for your time and, of course, your attention tonight. Have a great evening.